Please be advised that the views and opinions expressed by Richard Martin of LATAM Investments, LLC, are entirely his own and do not necessarily represent those of the company, its affiliates, or its officers. Investments made on the basis of Mr. Martin's comments are unsolicited by the company and are at the sole risk and prejudice of the listener or investor.
Martin here, Richard Martin's Wake Up Call, coming to you from Miami, Florida. I would like, first of all, to thank all my listeners for the incredible support that I have received for my talk on Monday about emigrating. I must tell you all that it is, as far as I'm concerned, a one-off discussion. I will certainly talk about emigrating in terms of where one might go, but the broadcast was really a landmark event, my Monday, the 5th of January broadcast, and I don't really see much virtue in emphasizing the point more than I have already done. I had said that we would return to normally regularly scheduled programming today, but I have received such an enormous outpouring of emails from you that I felt that I owe it to you to spend this hour answering your emails and basically coming to terms with the problems posed by these emails. So I'm going to do that today. Let me start off by giving you my information. Again, my name is Richard Martin. I encourage you today to call into the show. You can call in to the toll-free number at the studio of Progressive Radio Network in New York, and I will be informed that you are waiting online. My number, or rather the number to call of the show, is 888-873-4643. Once more, it is 888-873-4643. And as I say, the engineer will be standing by. He will take your call. I will be notified that you're on the line, and we will then take your call as and when an appropriate moment arises. What might also be nice, if you would like to have a discussion, ask the engineer to keep you on. I think we have five slots. We could theoretically have three or four people on at the same time, and we could discuss perhaps some of the issues involved in the contentions that I made on Monday, and that would be a lot of fun. And I will have to direct the proceedings because, obviously, from a distance, having several people talking will require a close monitoring on my part, but I'm more than happy to do that. So once again, if you'd like to call in, you may do so at 888-873-4643. Okay? My personal number, if you would like to call me in private about your individual concerns and financial problems, you may do so by calling me on my direct line at 305-579-2012. I'm going to repeat that once more. 305-579-2012. And you can also send me an email. And if you'd like to do that, you can. send me an email right now, and it will come up like Norma just did. Actually, I think it's Gary, writing under Norma's email address. Anyway, you can email me at the following address, rmartin@lataminv.com. LATAM is the name of the company I work in. It's kind of short for Latin American. LATAM, in for investments. LATAMINV, INV, is the address. Once more, rmartin@lataminv.com. Okay, so let's take an email which just came up right now on the screen from Gary, who says, "Dear Richard, I have been listening to you lately, and you mentioned that the bond market will blow up." You wrote the bond market. I'm assuming you meant the bond market rather than the body market, but anyway. "What is your opinion if someone has money invested in many bonds, including New York City, municipal, state, villages, hospitals, schools, districts, etc., is bonds backed with FSA and FGIC insurance safe? Would you sell an MBIA and AMBAC insured bond? Would you sell all of them? Would you just do some? Some are below par and some are above. Thank you, Gary." Gary, in short, I would sell all my bonds, every one of them, and buy a treasury bill money market fund, or just straight treasury bills, which you can do through treasurydirect.something or other, either net or org. You can find out, just Google Treasury Direct, and it'll tell you. I can never remember. But yes, I think you should be out of all municipal bonds. The municipalities are having terrible problems right now. Some 34 out of the 50 states are looking at bankruptcy to a greater or closer degree somewhere down the line in the next 5 years, and that's of now. As of now, I don't know what it's going to look like in the future, but it certainly isn't going to get better for several years. So I would avoid all municipal bonds. New York municipals, the states, the villages, hospitals, all these different character-type bonds that you mentioned, stay away from them all. I would sell all MBIA and AMBAC insured bonds. We all know how secure those two bond insurance companies are, i.e. not very. So yes, sell them all, okay? Have an email from John Ilo, who says, "Good afternoon, Richard. I've felt the desire to emigrate for years. Besides the obvious stumbling blocks of my own human nature, lethargy, apathy, it can't happen to me, etc., I've always stalled at choosing an alternative neighborhood. How did you choose the Philippines? Thank you for everything, John." John, it wasn't the Philippines, it is Singapore. Close, but not quite close enough. Well, Singapore is a very stable country. It is a very small city-state. There are few inhabitants. They have the world's number one best-rated government for the popularity in which its citizens hold it in the world. They have an excellent functioning social system, education, the roads, the utilities, everything works in that country. They don't seem to take sides in major world political disputes, so they're likely to be left alone. It's what they call Asia for the beginners. Well, we are definitely beginners, and so we shall begin in Singapore. That's pretty much that. We had Aoife One, who came, "You're moving. When? Why? Will you still be on PRN? Thanks, DC." Well, thank you for the concern, DC. We will still be on the air. I will attempt to secure a 7 a.m. or a 7 p.m. spot to make it easy for me, because we are exactly 12 hours distant from Singapore, so that would be most convenient for me. I'm sure, at least I hope, that Progressive Radio Network will oblige. why? Why, for one, you need to listen to my show from Monday the 5th. When? Not quite sure yet, but sometime in the next few months. And where? The Philippines. Okay. And then Eva One had another email that came in a day later, and he writes as follows. In December 2007, Rogers, that's the investor, Jim Rogers, sold his mansion in New York City for about $16 million and moved to Singapore. This is due mainly in his belief that this is a groundbreaking time for investment potential in Asian markets. Rogers' first daughter is now being tutored in Mandarin to prepare her for the future, he says. Moving to Asia is now like moving to New York City in 1907, he said. Also, he is quoted as saying, if you were smart in 1807, you moved to London. If you were smart in 1907, you moved to New York City. And if you are smart in 2007, you move to Asia. In a CNBC interview with Maria Bartiromo, broadcast on May the 5th, 2008, Rogers said that people in Asia are extremely motivated and driven, and he wants to be in that type of environment, so his daughters are motivated and driven. He said during that interview that this is how America and Europe used to be. He chose not to move to Hong Kong or Shanghai due to the high levels of pollution causing potential health problems for his family. His second daughter was born in 2008. Well, thank you very much. That is all true. You have just written to me another email, DC, saying, are you aware that Jim Rogers has also moved to Singapore? And the answer is, yes, I was indeed aware. I was also aware that he did intend to move to Shanghai originally, but as you rightly point out, the pollution was too great for him, so he decided to stick with Singapore. I think he definitely would have preferred to go to China. He believes that China is going to be at the head of the next rise in the world economy, and clearly China was his number one choice, but I think he'll do very well for himself in Singapore. Rona has just written in saying, hello, Richard. Would you still avoid munis if the U.S. government gives the states a general guarantee on them? Regards, Rona. Yes, Rona, I would. There is no official guarantee that the U.S. government is giving on many of these different issues that they have so kindly proffered a guarantee on, such as, for example, CDs up to $250,000 after some time later this year, money market funds, they've apparently given a blanket guarantee on them. I wouldn't think that a guarantee from the U.S. government is worth anything at all, frankly, except on its very own direct debt, which is U.S. Government treasuries. Treasury bills and treasury notes and treasury bonds, the safest being the bills for now. And as I've said before, when I believe it's time to buy the bonds, I will come in and give you the green light in no uncertain terms. But for the moment, I would not touch any other issue at all. The world is too dangerous. It's too difficult to perceive what's going to happen in the future. So I would stay away from them. Thank you, Rona. Then we had an email from Barbara Bruel. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing your name correctly, and I'm sorry if I'm not, but Barbara came in yesterday with an email as follows. Dear Richard, my husband and I listen to your show every week now. It has been an oasis in the sea of spoon-fed pablum we are receiving from our media and has really helped to keep us sane. Both of us are just entering retirement. We are relatively new listeners and suffered some pretty major losses in the markets, which may have a real impact on our retirement lifestyle choices. At present, my husband has virtually all of his savings, approximately $350,000, in annuities. These are returning on average 6% a year, but clearly he is not very diversified, and neither of us understands annuities or whether they are safe either for the short term or the long term. Most of my retirement savings, about $900,000 in all, are in corporate bonds which return a small income. Are these safe? If not, do you have recommendations regarding when we should get out of these and where we should put our money to keep it safe? I know you've mentioned bond prices may collapse, but is that only treasury bonds you are referring to? Are there any safe options for generating some small amount of income which we need in order to live at this point? Would it be possible for you to address these questions on your show? Thank you so much for all you do, Barbara. Right. Yes, Barbara, indeed. I will answer your email, but first of all, we do have Joe on standby. Joe, are you there?
Yes.
Where are you from, Joe?
Flemington, right by the Delaware River in New Jersey.
Okay, so you are from New Jersey. Excellent. How can we be of assistance to you, Joe?
I don't like it here. The economy and other issues are going on. I was wondering where in the States or Europe, specifically Holland or Germany, would be a better place for, like you're talking about Singapore, for an economic future, a clean environment, people that are motivated. I go to Germany because they're going with the solar cells and they seem to be going green, and they see where we're heading as a species to soil where we live. That, I heard before one of the things that people don't want to move to Hong Kong because of the pollution. I don't want to live with the pollution either, and I don't want to live with toxic people and bad attitudes. Where would you recommend other than Singapore? You know,
first of all, do you speak any foreign languages?
No, but I'm willing to learn.
Well, you know, it's very hard to answer that question always when people ask it, you know, because I don't know you and I don't know your situation. I don't know, for example, if you have a family of needy grandchildren that need to see you twice a year. I don't know how much money you have. I don't know whether you're prepared to live in the third world or whether you want a first world environment. I mean, there are so many unknowns. That we could sit here, I could spend, you know, 10 or 15 minutes gathering information from you and then give you an opinion. Honestly, I can only tell you that if you're looking for the first world, you should try to find a country like, for example, Singapore, where there is no political affinity with, you know, elements that may be inimical to, you know, perceived enemies. That's why I wouldn't choose Europe. I wouldn't choose Britain, for example, because
too much history, too much non-forgiveness, too much. Let's say, for instance, the Poles versus the Germans, and I just pulled that one right out. Or what, you know, or the English and the Irish. Is that what you're talking about? That's too much.
No, I don't mean that. I really mean current political ramifications, like, you know, Al-Qaeda, we know they've attacked the United States, they've attacked Britain, they've attacked Spain. I mean, these are all countries that support America meddling in the Middle East, not very wise to want to go and live there. And that's why I have certain reservations about Australia and New Zealand, though less so. But, you know, it doesn't leave that many first world countries, if that's what you're looking for. Now, if you're really happy to learn a new language and you do have a family that you want to visit here, South America is, or Central America, is very pleasant in many countries. You know, Costa Rica and Panama both have large American populations. Argentina is filled with, you know, many intellectual achievers. I mean, and it's very much a European lifestyle in Buenos Aires. I mean, there are plenty of nice places to go, but, you know, honestly, the idea that I should help you to select a place to live is very difficult. You know,
you've already helped with a couple of the ideas. Maybe I'll give you a call on your personal line one evening, or when you get a chance, and we'll spend 10 minutes.
Yeah, sure, absolutely, with pleasure. Thanks very much for
that. Thank you.
All right, let's go back to Barbara's question. All right, now let's just talk about first. Before I talk about annuities, Barbara, where your husband has $350,000, let me tell you again. Once more, and I don't mind repeating this over and over and over again. Honestly, you are not safe, really, unless you are focused on speculating against the market, which is what I do, you know, in order to try to make some good profits. As a general rule for somebody who's not really focused on markets or making money per se, which, by the way, one can perfectly easily do in a down market. There is no need for people to have these enormous losses they had last year. It's not necessary. There is ways of circumventing that and making good money going the other way as well. But I would suggest, again, Barbara, treasury bills, 90-day treasury bills, to be rolled over or renewed each 90 days, or CDs, which are, you know, fairly short-term CDs until the time comes to buy longer-term government bonds, which will happen but sometime, probably maybe not even this year, maybe next year. That is my recommendation as to where to put your money to keep it safe, as you say. There are no safe options, Barbara, to generate a small amount of income. You're not concerned today with making money on your money. I'm sorry. Interest rates are too low. There's too much competition for bonds. Don't join the competition. Wait. You're going to have to use the money that you have right now to live on. You get, you know, less than a percent in treasury bills, but this is the price you pay for keeping your money safe, you know? Now, you talk about privately managing people's money. Yes, we do that. And the last point you asked was, finally, we too have considered moving outside the United States. I know you mentioned Singapore. Are there any other places you think are attractive choices? I think you'll find that the answer comes up during this hour, Barbara. So I'm going to return to the annuity problem. Question, are annuities safe? Now, most people buy annuities because they see them as a refuge, an investment they can count on, even if the financial markets are spiraling downward. But you have to understand, Barbara, that that faith has been sorely tested in recent weeks. You know, the government had to step up to the plate and cover the debts of AIG, the nation's largest insurer. And the financial health of many other insurers has been called into question. You know, annuities are very complicated products. And again, it's largely because of the fractured nature of the country, where they simply cannot put annuities together as a unified vehicle and have you just buy them. Each state has its own rules and regulations. And I think the best way to deal with this is to discuss it in terms of what I would call three lines of defense. Hang on a second. Before we go ahead, let's take George from New York, who is on standby. Hi, George.
Hey, Richard. How are you?
All right. How are you doing?
Fine. I hope you get your time slot. I would definitely miss you if you weren't on the air. You're a breath of fresh air.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it.
Where in the United States would you say would be a safer place to live than in New York?
How about Alaska?
Yeah, it was a little chilly there.
Ah, well, you see, now you see you're doing what I said. The problem, you want your cake and eat it, and the icing on the cake is to be found in Alaska. Sorry, I couldn't resist that.
That's
one.
All right. Let's try the East Coast.
No, you know, the problem, my problem is, George, that, you know, everybody has their own parameters, so it's extremely difficult to give a one-shot, you know, one-size-fits-all answer to that. East Coast?
I'll limit it to civil unrest, the safest place, away from civil unrest.
I would say that, you know, next to Canada or even into Canada. I mean, you know, if you're talking about the East Coast, go up to Maine and then hop over to Canada if they come for you. You know,
I hope not.
You know, honestly, I don't have any preferences. I'm just shooting from the hip here. You know,
okay.
It really doesn't matter. I mean, I tell you, and I'm going to tell you all at this point, there is a publication which is basically directed at overseas venues called internationalliving.com, which I used to subscribe to, and then they sent me so much stuff I didn't have time anymore, so I had to stop. But One second, George. I have a feeling I'm receiving some information that you're doubling and you need to turn your computer down. Would you mind turning your computer either down or off while
it's
we
off,
have this conversation?
I turned everything down.
Oh, okay. So obviously you did that after the engineer wrote his thing. If you get in touch with International Living, all one word, internationalliving.com, they have excellent people in all sorts of different countries ready to help you if you are interested in relocating over there. If you want to stay in the States, I do think, as I said on Monday, I think a place away from a big city is obviously the place to be. Try to be self-sufficient if you can. Gary, I believe, has talked a lot about this on his show. But you want to stay away from the major metropolises, and you want to be basically in an agrarian area where you can grow things. It could come to that. I mean, there is reason to suppose that food supplies will have difficulty in reaching the large built-up areas.
I'm from Long Island, so if it gets a problem, I'm the first to feel it.
Well, I would say that's possible. But you do want to stay, close to where food really is. But again, this is so far down the line. This you can do with a couple of weeks or a couple of months planning. I mean, basically, I'm talking about moving out of the country, which takes a lot more thought and perseverance, and obtaining visas and work permits and residence permits, that type of thing. But as a rule of thumb, George, stay away from the big built-up areas, both because of the food problem, but also because of the unrest. People are much less likely to be marching up and down in small towns in the Midwest or the North, probably. That would be my advice. Okay?
Thank you so much, sir. And best of luck to you.
Pleasure. Thank you.
All
right, back to annuities. Now, when you're talking about the safety of annuities, which is what Barbara is concerned with, there are really three lines of defense that protect the money you have in an annuity. First of all, you have oversight. Insurance companies are regulated at the state level, and the main job of each state insurance commissioner is to ensure that the companies headquartered in that state have enough reserves or capital to meet their obligations to annuity owners and other policyholders. The second line of defense becomes a factor when insurers run into trouble despite the oversight. And specifically, the state insurer commissioner steps in and does anything from arranging of a takeover of the ailing insurer to transferring annuities and other policies to a healthy insurer. The third line of defense is the network of state guarantee funds. Most states cover up to $300,000 for life insurance death benefits, $100,000 in cash surrender values for life insurance, and $100,000 in withdrawal and cash value for annuities, although some states do have higher limits. And by the way, this coverage is per person per insurance company. So if the state limit for annuities is, for example, $100,000, and you have a $100,000 annuity with one insurer and another $100,000 with a different insurer, you would receive $100,000 of coverage for each annuity, okay? Now, you have to be careful, you didn't state, but I mean, variable annuities are segregated from the insurer's assets and cannot be tapped by the insurer or its creditors. But be careful, because you must remember that variable annuities, their value declines as the market declines, because they're based on their market value. Okay, so although you will be safe if the variable annuity insurer fails, you are subject to market fluctuations, and so I think they're very dangerous. When you're looking at the valuation of annuity insurers, you can check those ratings by companies like AM Best, Standard & Poor's, Moody's. Just remember to put in the exact name of your insurer, because sometimes they have subsidiaries which are insured separately. So you'll see the exact name on your contract. Now, remember that the ratings themselves are hardly foolproof. You know, the rating agencies can get it wrong, and the rating agencies can actually go out of business as well. So it's a very difficult problem to discuss, Barbara, but I would tell you off the cuff that they're probably as dangerous a vehicle, an investment vehicle, as they have ever been throughout history right now. I think a lot of insurance companies will go under, and I think the states will have a very hard time fulfilling their obligations to those. So my actual advice would be to sell them. Remember, be very careful, all of you, if you are offered annuities as an investment product. They contain very high commission rates to the seller, which many people don't understand, which is why they are so popular among the investment community as sales vehicles, because they do provide such a high rate of return to the salesperson. So that is a factor that you need to consider. Also, they're quite useless, in my opinion, in any kind of retirement vehicle, because the purpose of annuities is to provide you with tax-free income, tax-sheltered or tax-free income and appreciation. Well, since retirement accounts like IRAs and 401ks and 403bs, you know, they're all already sheltered from tax, why, you know, use a tax-sheltered product to go into a tax-sheltered account? You're kind of doubling up protection needlessly. So you might as well use your IRA for taxable products, which have a much higher rate of return and on which you will not be taxed, and leave the annuities outside that IRA, where you will get additional relief once you max out on your IRA and other forms of tax-sheltered retirement account. So just a word to the wise. All right, let's have a look and see what we have. We have Steve of Rent fame, who wrote in very kindly after my show on Monday, and I will read his email. He says, "Richard, wow, what a show that was. You are truly a person of decisive action. You see the ship is sinking. You get off the ship. Excellent move." Yes, well, let's hope I don't push the women and children aside in the process, Steve. I understand they have priority. "This is why I put such a high value on your advice. You don't tell people to do something and then turn around and do something else yourself. My wife and I wish you a problem-free relocation and good fortune at your new address. I do hope you can continue to host the wake-up call." Yes, I can. "It's a genuine learning experience, and we just love it. Thank you, Stephen and Kruger. P.S. It was a pleasure to listen to you speak on the Constitution and our formative years. You really do have the markings of a King's Court quality master renter. Well done." Well, thank you very much for that, Steve. I have Lewis, who wrote in asking me, if you are taking questions today, what were the other countries on your short list? Lewis, I think we're covering those during the course of this show. What about a move to Canada? Well, I think actually Canada is an excellent country, and I've often suggested for people who really want to as it were, experience the difference between Canada and the States, go to Detroit, spend a morning in Detroit, cross over the border, and spend the afternoon in Windsor, Canada. And I think you'll get the point. Canada is much more laid back. It has a much more socially conscious government and way of life. In many respects, Canada is an ideal place for Americans who want to leave. Now, my problem with Canada, of course, is the weather. My sister Angela notwithstanding, I love her dearly, but the weather is an impediment for me. I cannot see myself old and infirm skating around on the snow and ice trying to get to the shops to buy myself a pint of milk. But anyway, be that as it may, I believe that Canada is a very pleasant place, and lots of different types of environment in Canada to enjoy. What are your concerns about rising ocean levels since you're moving to an island? Well, Singapore isn't exactly an island, Lewis. It's a peninsula, if you like, but, you know, it is joined at the hip with Malaysia, so it's not quite that bad. I don't think ocean levels will rise. Personally, I think that this global warming thing is... I don't go for it. I've sent stuff out about global warming to certain people. I'm just not convinced that it's what everybody says it is. But we can talk about that at another time. Not on my show. It's somewhat political, and as you know, I try to stay away from that. What about moving to the hinterlands of the U.S. and establishing a sufficient farm? We talked about that just now with George Lewis. He was talking about moving to the U.S. I do think that that is a good idea. That is certainly an option. I would support that. Thanks for the info. All right. Thank you, Lewis. I appreciate that. Let's go back to the computer. I'll take somebody out of here. All right. Then we had John and John Ilo, the very first emailer that came in. Came in again with another email right now, saying, "Hi again, Richard. Do you consider the seemingly inevitable consequences of global warming when choosing a new place to live? What a coincidence that I've just talked about global warming. That must have been destiny rearing its ugly head. Might sea level areas be in question at this point in time due to potential rising waters? Thank you, Richard, John." No. I really, if I'm being asked this question twice in one day, I feel I need to say it outright. No, I don't think global warming is going to have any influence on your decision as to where you wish to live. I think it's an irrelevance, and frankly, I have a lot of information about it for anybody who's interested, but it's the same kind of nonsense as people who were talking about, you know, speculators pushing the price of oil up and peak oil, that oil was going to $200 a barrel. And if you remember last summer, ladies and gentlemen, I made it very clear that I thought this was not going to happen, that this was a bubble, an oil price bubble, and that the price would go down. I had no idea it would go down to $36 a barrel. That is true. I didn't think it would go that far, but these things always go further in a bubble on the upside and on the downside than most people believe possible. And in that respect, I urge you to use the oil price example to guide you as to where the stock market might go on the downside, much, 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 much further than most people think. But that's an aside. Some of these emails are actually coming in, they're kind of a bit repetitive from the ones we already have, and I've no doubt you hadn't heard the previous email, so you're sort of forgiven. Jonathan Stokely said, "I'm sorry to hear you're leaving the U.S. May I ask why you chose Singapore? Will they not be affected by the world's economic depression? For one, I don't think I have enough resources to relocate. What do you suggest for the people who cannot leave the U.S.? Do not be caught in the impending violence in the coming years. I have news for you, Jonathan. News for you. If you don't have enough resources to relocate, it probably means you don't have many personal effects to take to somewhere like Singapore. If you get on a plane and go to Singapore, I feel certain that within 3 weeks, you will have secured yourself a job teaching English at one of the, either the schools, their regular schools, or the academies for adults who need to learn English as a second language. They are in demand. English teachers are in demand. It virtually costs you the price of an air ticket, Jonathan. It's not as confronting as it may seem. And you're talking to somebody who has really moved around a lot in the world in my life, both with money and without money. I've been in both situations, and in both cases, I assure you, it's much less confronting. And don't forget, they speak English in Singapore. So, you know, you don't even have that problem. And they, like the United States, base their law on English common law. So, you know, it's not going to be such a huge cultural shock as you might think. They also speak a lot of different languages. So, and you can eat out at a different ethnic restaurant every night of the week. I mean, it's got a lot going for it for somebody like yourself who might be interested in, you know, looking around and seeing where else you might want to live, and being able to work at the same time. Not at all as difficult. And by the way, you can go to a website called Singapore Expats, and they will there's a lot of interesting information about Singapore on that site, including how to get work. It's certainly an advantage to know about these. Actually, I got that wrong. You might want to take this down. Anybody who's interested in Singapore, I thought it was Singapore Express. It's actually www.expatsingapore.com. Expat, singular, expatsingapore.com. I'll read that once again. www.expatsingapore.com. And there's lots of very useful information. There are blogs in there. You'll have a good time if you're interested in Singapore, checking that one out. All right. Thank you very much, Jonathan. Dara. Dara comes in. And Dara, may I take this opportunity of thanking you so much for all of the interesting emails you send me. I enjoy them. Some of them I just don't have time to read. Please understand, Dara, that if you do send me 3 or 4 a day, I'm probably going to get round to about one. But thank you anyway. I appreciate very much you thinking of me. And Dara says, "Hey, Richard, Happy New Year. Also sorry to hear about your wife's car being broken into. How awful. Glad it was nothing more serious. I totally agree with you that all kinds of security features in products are going to be the only items selling well over the next few years. Could you expound on another show why you think Singapore is the best choice for you? Why not Bermuda or Cayman or Monaco? Well, Bermuda's too small. You can get round Bermuda on foot in about 45 minutes, Dara. I can go there for a vacation. I think I might die of boredom if I actually lived there. And I know a lot of Bermudans who feel the same way. My sister used to work for the Bank of Bermuda, so she would agree with me, and I think, although I've never asked her. Cayman Islands, the islands are definitely for some, but not for others. If you like boating, I guess it's a wonderful place. The problem with Cayman is the hurricanes. Most hurricanes seem to, give the time of day to the Cayman Islands or thereabouts. So I think I would feel a little uncomfortable there. Monaco, what can I say about Monaco? Monaco I know well. I got my very first account, my first client ever, was from Monaco. It was a Greek shipping line, and it was a nice account, and it afforded me the opportunity of visiting Monaco about twice a month. So I know it well, and it's a wonderful place to visit. And if you like the south of France and you would like to be close to Italy, then I couldn't recommend it highly enough. And I'm sure you could also find work teaching English there too, by the way, even though it's much more cosmopolitan than Singapore. I think it's there's always work. The problem, don't forget, in Europe is that if you don't have a work permit, if you don't have a residence permit, it's very hard to obtain. Many of you have grandfathers in places like Italy where you can actually get an Italian passport, which gives you the right to work anywhere in Europe, which is very, very nice. But if you have to go out there and get a permit, it's not easy. So you have to bear that in mind. Singapore, they'll throw the permits at you because they're so desperate for foreigners to go and work there. So very different story in Singapore. And then Dara finishes off, "I wish you all the best and much prosperity in your new homeland. When that time comes, you will be missed more than you know." No, I won't, Dara. I'll be talking on the show. Don't worry, I'll still be around. It's just that I'll be talking at dinner time instead of lunchtime. But hopefully, I haven't talked to them yet about that. Maybe they don't want me anymore. I don't know. Anyway, I'm sure I'm looking forward to it, and I'm sure I will be able to continue the show. Richard Nesbitt wrote in saying, "Things are just great here in Canada. So I thought I might forward this sent by a friend the other day. Your Monday show was great. It's amazing that you would draw the same conclusions about the end point of the current financial mess gripping the world. I was thinking of moving to the Cayman Islands some years ago and now wish that I had. All the best, Richard in Alberta." What's this about "I wish I had"? You can go, Richard. Just pack up and go. You know, I never understand people who haven't traveled, I think it's a great shame. I've probably done more than my fair share of traveling, but it really is fun. And you meet a lot of new people with funny habits and, customs that you're not used to and languages that you don't even know. But it is fun to travel, and it shouldn't seem as confronting as all that. I think it's a little more difficult for Americans, because Americans have always been rather insular. There's always been this feeling in the States that, you know, Americans self-sufficient and doesn't really have to worry about the rest of the world. That, of course, has changed dramatically in the last 20 years. But even so, Americans probably, you know, could benefit from a little bit more exposure to the outside world. That would also be thrilling if the media were to oblige and to cooperate in that respect. There's very little, really, in the media that encourages you to look elsewhere. All right. Frank Devlin came in a couple of days ago with an email saying, "Richard, my motto for 09, beware or be a victim. Thank you for doing Monday's show. As a system of government and as a culture, we are long overdue serious self-examination. I am very curious about the audience reaction to your observations. You may find the lid on the box you have opened hard to close. Whatever the opinions of your listeners as to the endemic underlying causes for our current dilemma, the realities of it are, in our current argo, slapping us upside the head with a 2x4. And will for some time to come. Come to think of it, we did quite a job on the language, as well as the government, didn't we? From the foxhole, Frank." Well, I'm not going to disabuse you of that notion, Frank. I think you've hit the mark straight on. The audience reaction to my observations has been 100% positive. I am very glad that I have not yet received any negative feedback from what I had to say, which is very encouraging. It makes me realize that, you know, there's a big market in people basically coming out and telling it as it is. Americans really can take it. You know, it's a nice wake-up for me. It's a good discovery about American people, that when they're given stuff straight, they can really take it. And I'm sure that if politicians understood that too, they'd do a lot better. I'm just hoping that Obama can oblige. You know, he's already said things are going to get much worse, and if people don't move fast to contain the problems that we already have, they're going to take a lot longer to solve in the long run, and he's absolutely right. So let's just wish him all the best when he gets in a couple of weeks, and the courage basically to say these things, because they need to be said. All right. Peter Marciano wrote in 2 days ago and said the following. "Hello, Richard. Thank you for your show on January the 5th. As an American citizen, I must say that I was not offended in the least. In fact, your predictions for our future seem to support what I myself feel about this nation. Falling right on the heels of your January 5th show are the headlines of January the 6th, where the FBI announced that it was planning the largest hiring blitz in its 100-year history, planning to hire 2,100 new professionals and 850 new agents. These new hires will consist of internet and computer experts, finance experts, language experts, and intelligence analysts. All of this is to be done under the guise of fighting terror. I find this fits perfectly into a master plan to control, police, and intimidate the American people. I do not want the worst of your predictions to come true. However, reality seems to support your thesis. For those of us in this country that will have to remain here for the duration, how do you feel it's best for us to prepare? There is talk by some of holding gold, storing food, and moving to an area of the country where you can live and be supported by like-minded people in a community. But for the average American, myself included, I do not see this as being possible. Thank you for the selfless efforts in helping all of us. Peter." Thank you for your selfless efforts in helping all of us. Good question, Peter. Really, it is a good question. Of course, there are a lot of people that can't move, that have to make do. Basically, I would say to people who really cannot measurably adjust their lifestyle, check every single transaction you make. Be on the defensive at all times. Now, this is very unusual advice to have to give Americans. They've never, ever seen their livelihood in along those lines or in those terms. There used to be a time, you know, when you could leave your door open, your front door open when you went to do the shopping. I mean, nobody was going to come in or steal anything. I mean, it was just a completely different type of society. Now we are really at the opposite end of the spectrum. You must lock your doors. You must lock your car. You must take your belongings out of your car and stow them in the trunk or out of sight. You must make sure your children are safe when they go to school and come home. You know, all these things are now going to have to be unpleasant but necessary sort of obstacles to the way in which you've lived your life up to now. And when it comes to money, you must make sure that your money is safe. And as I've said, and I say it again, the safest money you can have in my opinion, is treasury bills. And I say that is even safer than cash, because you really don't want to keep your cash under the bed. You're much better off with treasury bills in book entry form with Treasury Direct or with a broker, where you know they're there, they're always going to be there, nobody can steal them, and they mature every 3 months. And you can take money out, you can roll them over into new treasury bills, and they are the senior most debt of the United States government. I just don't think you can do better than that. The government is AAA rated. There is talk that the government will be downgraded to double A ratings at some point in the near future. I'll deal with that when we get there. But right now, leave your money in treasury bills, and I don't think you'll have a problem. Holding gold, dangerous. I'm still not convinced that gold is going to go to the moon, like everybody seems to say. And that's one of the technical indicators, by the way, in any market, that you're probably on the wrong side of the market. When everybody says something's going to happen, usually the opposite happens. What's the rationale for that? Well, very simply, when everybody says something, it means they have already done something. And in investment terms, that means they've already bought the investment, in this case, gold. So if they've already bought the gold, then there's only one way for gold to go, and that is down. Now, I hold a very open mind about gold in a general sense. I'm not going to predict that gold is going to fall very much, though I do think it could fall to about $650 an ounce before moving up. But I'm not saying it's going to happen, and I'm not making any predictions or giving any advice along those lines. But I would be very cautious about putting any significant sums of money into gold at this point. You cannot eat gold. You cannot pay for your groceries in gold. You know, gold has no use as a metal. It's simply perceived as a store of value, and whether it is or not is debatable. The price of gold, I would remind you all today, is less than it was 29 years ago, almost to the very day when it hit $850 an ounce. And as I speak, the price of gold is $852 an ounce. So we're $2 higher than we were then. Now, it is up strongly today, and it could go higher. But I warn you, there may be unpleasant surprises in the meantime. All right. So let's get back to another email here. Ralph M. comes in with an email saying, Richard, what about taxation rates in different parts of the world, like Canada, Singapore, Central America, you mentioned? Which ones are most favorable? By the way, isn't Central America involved in drug cartels? Well, lots of questions there in three lines, Ralph. Taxation rates are different in each country, obviously. You are subject to tax in the country in which you live. Many countries, Singapore not included, have a double taxation agreement with the United States, which means that both countries agree that you will not be taxed twice. Now, Americans, for better or worse, are people whose government is the only government in the whole world that taxes its citizens on a worldwide basis, even if they do not reside in the United in their country of origin. This is very sad and quite egregious, in my opinion. It also, by the way, as an aside, applies to permanent residence card, green card holders such as myself. But be that as it may, there is a $90,000 exemption. The first $90,000 you make are exempt from United States tax. So that's a help, and a lot of people won't be making more than that anyway, but just so you know. For the rest, you're on your own, and hopefully you will not be liable to pay tax in two different countries. Central America, I mentioned, you are right, Ralph. I would use the example of Costa Rica and Panama. Those seem to be the most popular among Americans. They both have large American populations. My wife and I visited a population in Panama on its monthly meeting in a restaurant in the area where they lived, and they all seem to be very happy with their choice of venue in a coastal resort about an hour north of Panama City. Costa Ricans, we've met Americans there too. They seem to be very happy. Is Central America involved in drug cartels? Yes, I believe it is, but that's really a tiny proportion of the country, you know, less than 2%, frankly. Nothing for any of you to worry about. Not an issue as far as I'm concerned. All right, let's have another look at an email. Daryl in Georgia writes, "Hello, Richard. Thank you for all the great advice and information you've been giving over the last few months. I have listened. Your insight and perspective is wonderful and needed. Two items. Listening to parts of the President-elect Obama warns of dire consequences without stimulus sounds like the same pre-bailout speech and auto industry, help us or else. Will his idea of rebuilding infrastructure really work? Answer, no. How can we keep spending and hope to change anything? Is it so hard for the people to believe we're already in a depression and not listen to the same drivel? Not your listeners. Thanks, Daryl in Georgia." Obama is half right and half wrong. It's not the bailout measures that are going to solve the problem, Daryl. But there are going to be dire consequences anyway, with or without the stimulus. He's kind of half right. Unfortunately, he's right for the wrong reasons, which makes him actually probably wrong. But you don't need to be blackmailed anymore into this nonsense, as you were when it came to weapons of mass destruction requiring America to invade Iraq. Or the same nonsense, with the bailout being needed, or else there would be an immediate, you know, meltdown of the financial system, courtesy of our dear Treasury Secretary, Henry Paulson. We cannot indeed keep spending, Daryl. You're absolutely right. As I keep saying, spending more money where money was the problem is like throwing crates of whiskey at an alcoholic. It isn't going to solve the problem. It is what kept America in the Depression an extra 5 years, in my judgment. So there we have it. I mean, that's where we are. Now, my engineer, which I do not believe to be Ryan today, would normally be informing me that we have 5 minutes to go, and by this time it would be about 1 minute to go, and I haven't heard from him. So what I'm going to do is I'll just go on speaking until he tells me I have to wrap up, and then we'll wrap up. Oh, thank you very much. 1 minute it is. Well, a little bit late, but okay, better late than never. So that's really the nitty-gritty on that one. The bailout is completely useless, in my opinion. All this money being thrown at the problem just will make the problem worse and of longer duration. So, quite frankly, Daryl, you've understood very well or appreciated the information, and I wish you luck. At least you've seen the light. Michael B's question I've answered about why we've chosen to move to Singapore, and we'll talk about this more. I would be happy to discuss this in much greater detail if I get an interest, you know, through emails and things from people. So anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I do believe we're out of time. It's been, as always, a wonderful pleasure to talk to you, and I will be back on Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. So have a wonderful weekend. See you then. Bye-bye.